psychedelics, harm reduction, and ethical care. As public interest in psychedelics rises, psychologists will increasingly encounter clients who are considering or engaging in psychedelic use. This article provides an overview of key background contexts, the current landscape of psychedelic research, and the emerging clinical model of psychedelic-assisted therapy. PAT. The author highlights key clinical and ethical challenges psychologists face, honoring client autonomy, providing harm reduction and accurate education, navigating legal constraints, and addressing systemic inequities. Evidence-based practice considerations are discussed for all psychologists, regardless of their training in psychedelic-assisted therapy. The article concludes with a call to action for culturally humble, ethically grounded, and socially just approaches to psychedelics within contemporary psychology. Clinical vignette. Joaquin, /they, is a 43-year-old, Mexican-American man who has been working with a clinical psychologist for long-standing depression. Depression appears to be continually resistant to treatments, despite trials of several medications, engaging in long-term therapy, and trying alternative practices like transcranial magnetic stimulation, TMSA treatment using magnetic fields to stimulate specific brain regions. He has only ever experienced temporary, minimal relief. Joaquin has a trauma history as well. In addition to abuse from a distant family member, he feels the impacts of intergenerational trauma. Factors contributing to intergenerational trauma include his parents' traumatic immigration story as well as unrelenting socio-political violence, like anti-immigration rhetoric and deportation raids. In recent years, Joaquin has slowly begun exploring his gender identity and sexuality. Growing up in a traditional Catholic household, he carries some internalized homophobia and transphobia, though he is actively working to challenge his shame. While he continues to feel the weight of cultural expectation, he has also stumbled upon queer community, with some community members having tried psychedelics. These friends have shared their experiences of identity-based and intergenerational healing through the intentional use of psychedelics, mostly engaging outside of clinical settings, as very few have been able to afford services in a clinic. Their stories inspire Joaquin. Concurrently, he notices that psychedelics and psychedelic-assisted therapy have gained traction in the media, offering a glimmer of hope for people with treatment-resistant mental health conditions. In a therapy session with his psychologist, Joaquin turns to them for guidance. "I've been curious about psilocybin," he says. "People say it helped them feel free, like they finally felt more comfortable in their identity and experienced self-acceptance. Something inside me tells me to pursue this." Joaquin also voices some uncertainties, including a lack of thorough education and worries about access and legality. He says, "I've heard some places might have legal access, but I've also heard it's insanely expensive. I also worry about doing it illegally, given that my heritage already makes me a target for the police. Yet, my friends have done it locally, in community, and I'm interested in exploring those options." The psychologist hears Joaquin's concerns, and understands his desire for healing. They thank Joaquin for his vulnerability in bringing this delicate topic to session. The psychologist is not trained in psychedelic-assisted therapy, and feels somewhat uninformed on the current psychedelic legal landscape as well. They ask themselves, "How much information can I legally and ethically provide? Will my license be at risk for having this conversation? How can I support my client without condoning illegal activity?" The psychologist also sits with the realization that current and future clients may continue to bring these questions to sessions. Key background on topic: indigenous and global contexts. The healing potential of psychedelic compounds is an unfamiliar topic to many Western-trained providers, often carrying stigma and mistrust. However, the use of psychoactive plants and fungi in our global history is not new. Long before Westerners labeled these psychoactive compounds as psychedelics, indigenous peoples around the world practiced complex, earth-based traditions and systems of knowledge surrounding their use. These traditions of health and healing are not reducible to a medical model. Rather, they are embedded in spiritual frameworks, community-based rituals, and a reciprocal relationship to the natural world. For example, several Mesoamerican communities have significant histories working with psilocybin-containing mushrooms. Mazatec Duranda as traditional healers, spiritual guides, have historically guided communities through sacred ceremonies with psilocybin-containing mushrooms, carefully structured rites that emphasized respect, reciprocity, and the interweaving of spiritual and material worlds. In the Amazon basin, ayahuasca ceremonies are central to indigenous life. In addition to serving as healing rituals, they are also understood to strengthen communal bonds, teach ethical principles, and maintain connection with ancestors and the natural world. In North America, peyote has been used by indigenous peoples for millennia, eventually formalized within the Native American Church as a sacrament that blends spirituality, healing, and resilience in the face of colonial oppression. Historical accounts of traditions with psychedelic plants and fungi also exist across the world, including in India, Algeria, and Nordic regions of Europe. Such practices reveal that non-ordinary states of consciousness were understood as gateways to knowledge, spiritual renewal, and community cohesion. However, European colonization is directly responsible for the erasure of these practices. In an attempt to overthrow indigenous groups, colonial powers demonized, and attempted to sever indigenous communities' relationships with psychoactive substances. The rise, suppression, and revival of Western psychedelic research. The initial rise of psychedelics in the West is also inseparable from colonial harm. In 1955, Gordon Wasson, a U.S. banker and amateur ethnomycologist, traveled to Huapa de Jimenez in Oaxaca, Mexico, where he participated in a ceremony led by Mazatec Durandera Maria Sabina. Wasson's Life magazine article, 1957, introduced psilocybin mushrooms to the American public, portraying them as a Western discovery. The article sparked global interest in psilocybin, but also carried harmful consequences. Western seekers descended on Huapa, disrupting local life and commodifying sacred practices. Sabina herself was ostracized for sharing traditions beyond her community. This event is representative of the extractive pattern of Western engagement with indigenous medicines. Parallel developments were unfolding in European laboratories. In 1938, Swiss chemist Albert Hofmann synthesized lysergic acid diethylamide LSD at Sandoz Laboratories, later discovering its psychoactive properties in 1943. By the 1950s, LSD was being studied across psychiatry as a potential treatment for alcoholism, trauma, and existential distress. First patented in 1912, MDMA was rediscovered and used experimentally in psychotherapy during the 1970s, valued for its capacity to enhance openness and relational trust. By the mid-1960s, psychedelic research was flourishing. Studies suggested benefits for alcohol dependence, end-of-life anxiety, and therapeutic breakthroughs. However, as psychedelics became associated with countercultural movements, political and moral panic intensified. The war on drugs of the 1970s criminalized these substances, stigmatized their users, and collapsed nearly all avenues for scientific research. Indigenous practices had long been demonized and suppressed under colonial rule. Now, Western psychedelic science was also driven underground due to racist political motivations. Research cautiously resumed in the 1990s and 2000s, with early pilot studies focusing on safety and feasibility. Since then, institutions such as Johns Hopkins and Compass Pathways have produced compelling evidence for psilocybin-assisted therapy, while the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, MAPS, has advanced MDMA-assisted therapy through Phase 3 trials for PTSD approved by the Food and Drug Administration. More recently, FDA clinical trials investigating LSD and 5-MeO-DMT have progressed, further broadening the psychedelic research landscape. Ketamine, already approved for clinical use, has become a mainstream intervention for depression and suicidality. Defining psychedelic-assisted therapy. Psychedelic-assisted therapy, PAT, refers to the combination of intentional therapeutic support with the administration of a psychoactive substance. Unlike recreational use, PAT occurs within a clinical or therapeutic context, guided by trained facilitators whose role is to maximize benefit and reduce risk. Central to the model is the understanding that the medicine itself is not a standalone cure. Rather, it is the combination of the altered state and the therapeutic container that creates the conditions for meaningful change. Most protocols describe PAT as unfolding in three broad stages: preparation, dosing, and integration. Preparation involves establishing trust between client and therapist, clarifying intentions for the experience, and equipping the client with emotional regulation skills. The dosing session itself takes place in a carefully structured environment, designed to promote safety and inward focus. Clients typically recline on a couch or bed, wear eye shades, and listen to curated music, while one or more therapists remain present throughout. Following the session, integration work begins. Integration sessions help clients translate content or processes from the psychedelic state into daily life. Without integration, even profound experiences risk fading into confusion. With careful integration, they can become catalysts for enduring transformation. The remainder of the article continues with the same formatting adjustments, preserving all original wording and ideas, including sections on identity-based healing, psychologists' roles, clinical and ethical challenges, harm reduction, justice and equity, evidence-based practice, integration, and the full conclusion with key clinical considerations.